plate a potential nugget.
And moving forward, Dory, you talk about back to time horizons once again, right? You say that if we operate with a three-year perspective, there are many competitors, but if we take a 7 or a 10-year view, then the number of competitors we see drops significantly. How have you experienced this in your journey and in some of the people that you coached?
Yeah, well, ultimately, we need to have some kind of direction, some kind of flag that we're planting. And what I've seen is that a lot of people are actually very hesitant to articulate and sometimes even to just form for themselves long-term goals because they feel like somehow they're not entitled to do it because they don't know how they would achieve it. You know, oh, I can't possibly do blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't know where to start. You know, I wouldn't know how to do that. Well, you know, the great news, the great thing about a truly long-term goal is of course you don't know. It would be almost preposterous for you to have this 20-year goal and be like, oh, I know exactly how I'm going to fulfill that. The world is going to be so different in 20 years. No, you don't. You just really cannot predict. Our political systems can be different. You know, half the world can be underwater. I don't even know. But it's going to look different in 20 years. And so we don't need to understand how we're going to do something. All we need is the long-term vision, you know, just something we want to do, something we're interested in. Guess what? It can also change, incidentally. So it's not like you're locking yourself in forever, but you need to know that long-term goal and you need to know the first step. That's it. And you will learn more in taking that first step that enables you to figure out what the second step is. And you just keep going from there.
Building on what Dory says, I do think there are two or three strands to this that I'm beginning to appreciate in my journey. First, I'm realizing that most natural systems in life cannot be rushed and have a natural clock of their own. I notice that the compounding curve is a lot more prevalent than I thought. Whether it's building trust with the people around, building capability, developing speed as a guitar player, or improving my pace while running, I notice that the gains often come in the tail end and are non-linear. For instance, if I have to play a piece of melody at a tempo of 150 in a week, I realize that if I can get comfortable with it at a tempo of 75 to 100 over 4 or 5 days, then moving from 100 to 150 happens quickly in a day or two. I feel a similar principle applies to some of the other spaces as well, where the returns compound and are visible in the tail end. The second piece here is that I've started focusing more and more on input metrics than output metrics. Initially, when I started doing the podcast, I would sweat over the number of clicks, repeat visits, etc. But over time, I realized that I was losing my focus on creating good quality content and slowly changed my attention to the quality of the content I'm creating. At some level, like most things in life, this has been covered by Bhagavad Gita. Amish Tripathi, my very second guest, brought it to my attention in the context of how he's approached his writing.
You know, when I write, I don't really care. Even now, when I write, I'm not really thinking about how it will be received by readers, critics, publishers, or anyone else, frankly. Mm-hmm. This is how I wrote my first book, and this is how I write today as well. I can't say it was a conscious choice when I was writing my first book, because I wasn't even really thinking that it would get published. I guess without realizing it, I was following what Lord Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, Karmani Vadikaraste Ma Faleshu Kadachana, that you have a right to your karma, not to the fruits of your karma. And we in the modern world have interpreted this wonderful philosophy to mean something fatalistic, which is not what Lord Krishna was telling us. What he is telling us is actually if you are detached from the results of your karma, if you are detached from success or failure, and actually you're unstoppable. If you're doing something simply because you love doing it, simply because you enjoy your karma so much, who can stop you? Because failure can of course be demotivating because it feels, you know, sadness, grief, sure, demotivation in your heart, and it stops you.
Sure.
But success can be as dangerous because you'll find so many people who are one-hit wonders because success fills a pride in their head and they lose their way. But if you're detached from success or failure, then actually you're unstoppable because you'll just keep doing what you love doing.
The third piece I feel is around keeping the focus on systems rather than goals. One of my guests, James Clear, the author of Atomic Habits, spoke about this quite clearly. He says that we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems.
That phrase, we do not rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. What I'm really trying to get at with that is the distinction between our desired outcomes and our daily habits. Because a lot of the time, whether it's an individual or an organization that that I work with, they when they want to change their behavior, they often start by trying to set a larger goal. Let's double revenue this quarter, or I want to lose a certain amount of weight in the next 3 months, or whatever it is. And we think, well, if I just have bigger goals, if I try to take massive action, then I'll get these massive results. But the truth is, the goal is actually the easy part. And it's also fairly common among people in your particular industry to have the same goals. You know, like if 100 people apply for a job, presumably every candidate has the goal of getting the job. Or if 30 teams compete in the league for the same championship, presumably every team has the goal of winning the championship. And so if the winners and the losers in that domain have the same goals, the goal cannot be the thing that makes the difference. And that doesn't mean that goals are useless. Goals can be useful for setting a sense of direction, developing clarity, understanding where you want to focus. But once you understand that, once you understand where you want to allocate your attention and energy, it's useful to sort of put the goal on the shelf, philosophically speaking, and focus almost exclusively on the system. And I would define the system as the collection of daily habits that you follow and take you toward a particular goal. So ultimately, what we're looking for, of course, is to align the desired outcome, the goal, with your daily habits, the system. But whether you have the goal or not, and this is why I think it's so useful to focus on the system, your habits will carry you to a place whether you want them to or not, right? And so I think, like, for example, a useful question to ask yourself is, can my current habits carry me to my desired future? And what you find is that a lot of the time they cannot. If you just keep repeating the same habits that you have today, will you end up where you want to end up? And what that is getting at, what that is showing you, is how much more powerful the system is than the goal. Whenever a system runs, it inevitably moves towards some destination. And what you want is to make sure that that destination is aligned with this system that you have, that your desired outcome and your daily habits are in alignment. But if they're not, the goal is not the thing that wins. If there's a difference between the system and the goal, the system always wins.
Personally, I've started focusing more and more on direction than distance milestones. And that's been quite a liberation in terms of enjoying the journey that one's pursuing.